You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
Today we're going to find out more about the first genomic science company that is going for listing in Malaysia. Joining us today is Adlan Herkes, the financial controller of MGRC. MGRC stands for Malaysian Genomics Resource Centre. So they provide genome sequencing and bioinformatics services. In layman language, they can tell you more about your DNA. So if you have any questions for Adlan, please send them to 016-201-9000. Phone lines will be open after 8:15. Thank you for joining us today. So what's the story you're selling to investors about MGRC?
Well, with MGRC, we're actually selling potential, the potential of a new industry with a lot of growth. To put it into perspective, in 2000, they sequenced the first human genome. And over the last 10 years, what we've seen is more and more genomes being sequenced, whether it's plants or the bacteria, certain viruses, as well as cancers. And what's happening now, as the cost of sequencing is dropping, more and more species or genomes are being sequenced, and eventually what you're going to find is every one of us will probably be sequenced at least once in our lifetime. All the plants and all the animals at some point over the next 10, 20 years will probably be sequenced. It's the birth of a new industry.
Okay, so I'm talking about, you mentioned it's an industry with a lot of growth. What sort of growth can we expect from MGRC?
Growth from MGRC. Well, I mean, you can see from our numbers historically, going back to 2007, 8, 9, this is really the beginning of the industry. It's where, all the public sector funding that has gone into the giving birth to this industry is actually coming to fruition. And you've seen private sector interest as well. And right now, we're on the doorstep of the consumer revolution in terms of this interest. And so I think everyone in this industry is actually quite optimistic as well, but it's quite hard to peg. I mean, you're talking about scientists that have never really dealt with the consumer, and here we are on the doorstep of the consumer interest in this industry.
Okay, so before we dive into the numbers, let's talk about the variables that will actually drive your business. So your clients are your parent company, Cinematics, and a biotech corporation, which is the government, and a teaching affiliate hospital of the Harvard Medical School. Now, who else should be using your services and isn't yet?
Well, okay, the consumer aside, okay, basically anyone that's doing research that has anything to do with organic, I mean, with living material. You've got anyone that's in the crop sciences, agriculture, as well as even biofuels. Any industry that has some sort of component of living organism could probably benefit from genomics.
Okay, so with all that knowledge of genomics and all that, how can it be commercialized, and how soon can that information be used and commercialized?
I think it's probably one of those industries where there's a lot of hype and there's a lot of potential and there's a lot of money going into it, but the payoffs are probably going to be quite a lot further down the line. I mean, you're talking about research going into the sequencing of genomes, and then you're talking about the scientists needing to understand the genomes. Only once they can actually understand it can perhaps they can seek patents for certain genes, and they understand perhaps that this gene works for making a plant grow taller or grow shorter or slow its rate of growth. Only then can you really start seeing commercial value coming from this industry.
Okay, so if commercial value and payoffs are going to be down only further down the line, does that mean like 10 years later usually?
Well, it depends. I mean, again, if you're talking about certain crops that have gestation periods of, several years, then perhaps, yeah, you're talking about 10 years down the line. But even, it's not uncommon in the healthcare industry as well. Even today's medicine that we take, like even Panadol, has gone through rigorous cycles, even those about 8 years or more. It's not uncommon in this industry. When you're dealing with such sensitive material as a DNA, it's probably worthwhile that it takes so long.
And the length of time is really because you need to build up your data bank, right? Let's say if you're talking about crops, you need to build up a data bank of a few crops, a different kind of species?
Well, it's perhaps the same species, and what you're trying to do is have different plants that have demonstrated different characteristics within the same species. For example, one that bears more fruit versus one that, perhaps has a slower rate of growth. So what you're trying to do is actually understand those traits and those genomes and those genes in relation to the reference gene, which would be like the normal plant genome, for example, of that plant. And only once you can understand that, perhaps then you'll start seeing the value from it. So it's not really comparing it across species, although there is value there. It's really about looking at a species and comparing different traits from different plants.
And then trying to create a perfect plant?
Well, potentially. I mean, for example, take a look at the wheat industry. You know, over a period of 40 years, from the 1960s till today, they've actually gone and meticulously tried to improve the wheat grains. And what you've got now is a situation where the seed, and I think they call it a super seed or whatnot, actually produces 400% more wheat than in the 1960s. What genomics promises is the ability to be able to do that, perhaps in a shorter period of time. So if you compare 10 years to what traditionally took 40 years of laborious trial and error in a wet lab and seeding, you know, 10 years isn't that long.
Okay. And so if 10 years does not sound very long maybe to a scientist, but to a businessman who has to run a business, who has to show profits to shareholders, what sort of risk appetite, I mean, for this kind of research, what sort of risk appetite do the private sector have?
Well, in terms of a potential investor that's looking to invest, let's say, in our company, right? See, we don't actually do the research. We don't actually take the 10 years to actually find out which part of which trait or which gene is responsible for making or bearing more fruit. All we're doing is actually analyzing and processing the data for the scientists. So we're actually step one of this whole cycle.
So you provide the software and the tools.
And we actually, you know, help the scientists. We work together with most of the scientists that we've worked with before. We work together with them to understand their needs. And we're trying to find and extract meaningful data from the genome. You're talking a vast amount of information. And what we help to do is tell the scientists where to look as opposed to where not to look. And that's valuable information for a scientist that perhaps 40 years ago didn't know where to start. So we help that process along. And, you know, so we're right at the beginning. So we don't really have to wait 10 years for our commercial value to materialize. I mean, we're right there, step one.
Okay, because as you provide the services, they have to pay for it. Essentially.
Of course.
Yeah, so okay, so new clients will be the catalyst for your earnings. So right now, I see from your prospectus, you have like three main clients, your holding company, the government, and this teaching affiliate hospital, which is affiliated to the Harvard Medical School. So when are you aiming to sign on more new clients?
Well, what you'll see in Malaysia, and this is a phenomenon that you'll probably find globally as well, that public sector funding has been a huge driver in this industry. In the year 2000, when they sequenced the first human genome, that was at a cost of $3 billion. And that was all publicly funded. Even our work that we do with Harvard, I mean, at the end of the day, they're a publicly funded institute as well. So in any country really around the world, public sector funds are driving this industry. And, you know, what we hope to see is actually continued support from the Malaysian government, as it has been in the last 5 years, for this industry.
So the fact that you're going for listing, does that mean that you're going for listing to raise funds, does that mean that the government's not supporting what you do?
No, not at all. Our actual decision to actually go forward with the listing was really, you know, our stakeholders took a look at the industry, and really the validation that we've got from our customers like Harvard overseas really gave us the impetus to say, look, we've got something worthwhile competing globally for. So why don't we take this to the next level? And really, so it's about expanding our services across both the sequencing and the analysis and, you know, going after more customer, broader customer base, and preparing for really the consumer rush that will probably end up, you know, coming as soon as 2013. Really.
Okay, so why in 3 years' time you foresee there'll be a consumer rush?
Well, like I said, in the year 2000, the cost of sequencing one human genome was $3 billion. As soon as we've actually received the listing proceeds and purchased the sequencing equipment, you'll be able to do that in Mid Valley for 100,000 ringgit. So in 10 years, it's gone from $3 billion down to 100,000 ringgit. And in a couple of years, that cost will probably drop down to 30,000, 10,000. And eventually, the consumer will be able to purchase that same $3 billion genome, probably for about 1,000 ringgit.
Okay. And what will drive this cost down?
Well, the cost has been been driven down over the last 10 years really by new advances in sequencing technology. You know, I like to call it like a photostat machine, but really it's just the process of taking one's DNA or blood or a sample and all that, extracting the DNA, and then breaking that DNA apart into its individual components. I mean, there are four chemicals that actually make up DNA, the A, C, T, G, too.
Yeah. So by breaking up the DNA, for example, in healthcare, then you can understand and your DNA type and maybe treat, let's say if you have cancer, you can treat it better.
Well, eventually, I mean, hopefully one day you'll be able to do that. I mean, the work that we're doing together with Harvard, they're treating lung cancer patients. I mean, asbestos poisoning in the U.S. is actually quite prevalent, and that's what our work with Harvard is on about. It's lung cancer, and when we're actually bringing their surgeons down from the U.S. this October to actually give a talk to healthcare professionals here in Malaysia, and perhaps that might mark a change in terms of the way we use personal genomics data to treat patients here in Malaysia. But I mean, it just goes to show that even, you know, in the U.S., that surgeons are making use of this data to better their patients.
Okay, we'll talk more about the application in Malaysia. You mentioned about technology, and with technology improvements, you'll find that the cost will go down. That's what you're aiming for. So if you're going to spend all this money from the listing proceeds to buy equipment, will the equipment be outdated?
Well, the equipment, you know, what we've seen in the past is every 4 years there's leaps and bounds in this equipment. And usually what happens is these leaps and bounds are marked by not only just the cheaper cost of sequencing, but the ability to produce that much more data, you know, 100 times more data, 100 times cheaper. But it's not to say that the machines that we purchase today become outdated. You know, they've always been used for perhaps a different type of application, but in terms of perhaps human genome sequencing, the newer machines would probably be better. It doesn't render these machines absolutely useless, but perhaps what we would do is we would actually apply it to perhaps some other sort of study, whether we do it to plants or bacteria or microbial genomes or whatnot. But it'll never necessarily become redundant, not you know, in a period of like 4 years.
Okay. Yeah. We're speaking with Adlan Herkes, the financial controller of MGRC. They are a company that's going for listing in the ACE market.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Joining us this morning is Adlan Herkes from Malaysian Genomics Resource Centre. They're going for listing on the ACE market tomorrow. Actually, the balloting will close at 5 p.m. So back to this question about, you know, when will you actually sign on new clients? Would that be in 2013, for example, or would it be next year?
No, I mean, we're already working at, you know, signing on new clients. It never really stops. There's so much work that needs to be done in terms of this genome sequencing. I mean, if you put it into perspective, like I said earlier, every single thing will be sequenced at some point, and we will all be sequenced ourselves at some point. So we're only just beginning, we've only just embarked on this, and the technology now that's become so readily available to so many just means that now man will not stop until they've sequenced everything.
Okay, so the question is, why should they use MGRC services versus, say, a center like J. Craig Venter, which I think Genting Plantation, one of their subsidiaries, are working with them? How would your service be more superior than others?
I mean, Craig Venter, I mean, they've got, they do marvelous research. You know, he is their sort of like godfather or founder of this whole industry. In fact, when they sequenced the first human genome, it was his genome. Well, he was one of the six genomes that actually went into their big mashup of that became the human reference genome. But I mean, they do great work, but they're really focused on the R&D. And I think a lot of their commercial interests are focused on actually biofuels and generation of oil from alternate sources. Our work, essentially, we're not really so focused on a particular industry. We'll actually service anyone, whether it's human, agriculture, industrial. And reason why customers come to us, I mean, Harvard put it into perspective for us as well. I mean, they said that we were the only company that could process the data faster than they could generate it. And that still holds true today. And they said this way back in 2006. And even today, we're the fastest in the world to process data and probably the most accurate as well.
Okay, the fastest, huh?
Fastest.
Okay. And is this independently proven or independently audited?
Well, you know, an interesting thing with the listing exercise, you know, what you go through with the listing exercise is a real coming of age, you know. The things that we put into the prospectus and, you know, having it all validated by so many independent parties, and they question every word and actually independently go and validate it themselves and all that, it says what it says. We are the fastest in terms of, you know, the ability to process genomic data. And
But this is a greenfield industry. I don't expect, like, the merchant banker that will be Kenanga, right? I mean, they are in the business of bringing companies for listing. They're not in the business of knowing what's really in genomic science.
Oh, no, true. But they weren't the only independent party that validated it. I mean, you know, we had, of course, Bursa validated, and even, you know, all of the other advisors and all that. They query every single word that you put
what
and
about,
why you...
What about a scientific advisor or a scientific body? Is there such a body?
Probably not, actually. But, you know, in terms of... as part of the prospectus and all that, in terms of validating all of this claims about speed and all that, they did speak with our customers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what are some challenges in getting prospective clients to use your services? Is it an issue of funding, bureaucracy, laziness, apathy?
It's not so much that. It really is about us getting out there and becoming, making ourselves more perhaps prominent to these customers. Again, the industry is so young, but we have been at the forefront of this industry right since day one. I mean, from attending international conferences to actually participating now in international tenders to actually sequence new genomes, it's a very new industry. So new clients as well. I mean, chances are, you know, the word of the industry is so small, it's so... in terms of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Clicky. You know, where a lot of the lead generation that happens actually comes from word of mouth. Even Harvard, for example, came to us by word of mouth.
Okay, we have a person on the line now, Adeline Tan. Adeline, what's your question for Adlan?
Hi, yes. I just want to find out whether our local talents have the required skills for this sort of industry.
You know, when we first started off back in 2002 with Cinematics and subsequently in 2004, sure, you know, we had a tough time hiring people. But what we've actually seen since then is actually a maturity, you know, a maturing of the industry in terms of the academic courses that they've run. And, you know, even with the work that we've conducted, I mean, we work very, very closely with the universities and... Our founder, Robert Herkes, he even actually went and taught at University of Malaya on weekend courses in bioinformatics. So what we're actually finding now is a level where we can actually interview people, you know, put out a call for bioinformatics, and we'll actually get suitably qualified individuals. But, you know, just to note that this is not a unique situation in Malaysia. Even globally, when we actually need to go and hunt and hire people internationally, it's the same, whether in India or even in Europe. You know, they're few and far between, and I think Malaysia's got definitely a large pool of bioinformaticians on the way.
So if people with, thank you, Adeline, if people who have a biotech or pharmacy or even a biology degree, can they apply for work at your place?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course. I mean, we're not just, when we first started off, sure, we were very centric on the systems analysts, you know, the IT side. But, you know, ever since starting to work on these projects with Harvard as well as on the Old Palm Genome and with all these other projects that we get to work on, we are building up that scientific expertise within the firm. Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to your figures, I think some investors are very keen to know. There's a question here. Hey, Ace Market is famous for companies becoming invisible after listing. How will you ensure a market for your shares post-IPO?
Well, I mean, all I can say to that is, I mean, you know, we've been venture cap funded since day one. You know, we have a long history of actually, you know, taking care of our investors and actually returning shareholder value over the long run. And all I'm going to say to that is you just have to wait and sit tight and, you know, observe us. I mean, this listing strategy really is about our stakeholders making a decision to actually take this company to the next level. And, we've got some exciting things coming up. We're not just really going for this listing. It's more than just about the raising money.
So what is it about if it's more than just raising money?
Well, I mean,
money?
You know, the listing actually brings about a whole, you know, level of credibility as well. I mean, visibility, one thing. I think the whole passage of going through the process of actually listing, it's almost like a ritual in a way that companies at the end of the day will look at you differently. I mean, you've been through this process. You're out there, you're exposed in the way, and, you know, from corporate governance perspective and even from the perspective that you're an open book, it just means that you've really arrived. I mean,
Okay, it brings a certain professionalism to how the whole organization is run. We have another caller, Alvin, on the line.
You are rather new in Malaysia and a very new company. What was the rationale behind for you to go listing in H market, which is a relatively not so good market? And is it you are trying to split the risk to the shareholders so that the promoter of this company don't have to hold the risk themselves?
Okay, understood. Thank you for your question. In terms of why, I mean, okay, first to address the issue of us being relatively young, the whole industry is relatively young. It was really only started in about the year 2000. So when we started in the year 2002 and MGRC in 2004, I mean, we are as pretty much as old as this industry is. In terms of why we decided to move with the ACE market listing, well, put it this way, our stakeholders aren't really trying to share the risk with potential investors and all that. What the stakeholders have created is this commercial company that has the ability to generate revenues and profits. And what we're looking to do is actually take this to the next level. So we're really sharing the profit potential and earnings potential with the investing public, and that's really the point of view that we've really tried to take with this whole listing. And your final question as to why ACE and not something else? Well, really, when the stakeholders decided to actually proceed and take MGRC to the next level, it wasn't really that we chose ACE. It was more like, I think, fair to say that ACE chose us. It really is a situation and of our having full year audited results and meeting the profit requirements of the main market listing and all that forced us into the ACE market initially.
And we have another caller on the line, Emily.
Hi. I just like to ask, when you market yourself internationally, how do you overcome the perception that Malaysians are less capable technically?
Thank you, Emily.
That's a very good question, and we get asked that quite often. In fact, you know, when I remember once we had a call from a U.S. customer who was actually concerned about Sharia laws. I mean, exactly. So there is a perception, and it's not necessarily always technical in nature. It's, you know, dealing with, you know, the Far East, perhaps, and it really is about us, you know, going out there and demonstrating, and, you know, it's a lot of initial groundwork and putting the nose to the grindstone, and it's about going out there and being really patient and validating and, you know, demonstrating to the clients that we actually do have a workable solution. And what happens at the end of the day is, you know, once, for example, like Harvard found that they could work with us, it didn't really matter that we came from Malaysia or from the Far East or whatnot. I mean, they continue to be our customer today, and I can't imagine that they would swap out for anyone else, even a US-based customer, quickly. It's about, really, once you've got your foot in the door, demonstrate that you can do it, and after that, all these perceptions really go out the window.
Okay, and back to the valuation of your stock. The issue price is about 1 ringgit and 8 cents. That would be about maybe 7 times estimated earnings. Now, why is that reasonable valuation?
Well, I actually think it's quite low. But, you know...
So why price it so low?
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of those, you know, things. We do recognize that we are going for the ACE market listing. We do recognize that we are perhaps going to be one of the larger stocks on the ACE market by market cap. So it really is a, you know, a situation where it's a new industry and all that. We felt it was necessary to price this low. But, I mean, we've had no problem placing out the pre-IPO shares. And we're actually quite optimistic with the response that we've had to our IPO. And, you know, all I can say is that, you know, whoever decides to subscribe, I mean, there's certainly some upside there if our PEs align with the rest of the market.
Okay, yeah. So what sort of response have you gotten? I mean, you say optimistic.
Well, you know, I mean, just our IPO prospectus, I mean, we're looking at 19.1 million shares in total. And, you know, as part of that, only 2 million shares are going available for the ballot. So prior to this, we had to actually place out about 16.5 million shares. And, you know, sure, we went and presented to funds and a lot of individuals. But, you know, it's an interesting thing how, you know, a lot of the funds which were necessarily precluded from investing in the ACE market because of the volatility or because of the perceived risks and all that, we still had no trouble placing these stocks out with high net worth individuals.
Okay, and you know, I think also the reason you've put quite a big discount, I suppose, you were saying that it seems quite low. So, are you putting this discount because you're not optimistic of, say, the revenue model?
No, not at all. I mean, the revenue model is actually quite concrete. I mean, as weird as this industry sounds, or as you know, far far out there in terms of DNA and, you know, dealing with genomes and all that, it seems. I mean, our pricing really falls much in line with many utility models that, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, we process data. So we have server farms, we run them 24/7, and that's what we do. We're not really wet lab scientists and all that. We are data processing.
Okay, back to this question that Alvin asked. You see, what happens when a company goes on listing in ACE? I mean, it's all and well, you know, low PE and all that. But, you know, often they trade below their fair value, often overlooked by fund managers, the big fund managers, because it's either too small. No fault of your part, it's just that the size was a problem, right? So what is going to be your investor relations strategy to ensure that the market understands your stock?
Well, I mean, I actually hold, investor relations quite close to heart. Personally, I actually started in the financial services industry when I graduated. And it's not to say that the task at hand is not difficult. Sure. I mean, we have to convince the man on the street that here is this biological sample and how we convert that into dollars and cents is not an easy thing to understand. But what we've actually seen at the level of the fund managers when we've gone and present to them, I mean, there is actually a genuine interest in this new economy stock. It's not like the technology of yesteryear where you're looking at, you know, graphs showing exponential growth in the number of users and whatnot. I mean, sure, we have exponential graphs in our industry as well, but they're all current. And when you bring it down into the perspective of it being data processing, a lot of their funds and a lot of the investors actually understand it and perceive it a lot simpler that way.
So what is your investment investor relations plan then? Is that you're going to see an X number of fund managers, or what are you going to do? Let's put some specifics to it.
Well, I mean, of course, we are going to hold the analyst briefings.
Is before or after? After.
Well, probably after listing, immediately afterwards. All I'm going to say is, I mean, watch out for our quarterly announcements and the lead up to that. I mean, everything has been quite well planned for the next 18 months or so in terms of this IR strategy. And, you know, in terms of the strategy for MGRC moving forward as well, I mean, we are going to leverage this time when we are on the ACE market as a large cap stock and try to attract as much attention as we can during this period for the benefit of our shareholders.
And you mentioned returning shareholder value in the past. So what's the dividend payout like?
In the past, I mean, prior to this listing exercise, we did declare a dividend up to our shareholders. And like I said, I mean, what we've actually created here and what we're actually listing, we've structured it such that this is our commercial entity. This is a vehicle that has the ability to generate revenues, and this is what we're listing. The dividends payout in previously was really to reward their previous shareholders for their essential faith in the business for the last 6 years. And to be quite frank as well, I don't think the market would have valued cash in the bank as much as they would earnings growth. So really, it was timely to actually pay that out. And in terms of, you know, that moving forward as well, like I said, we've been venture cap funded since day one, so we invest our funds wisely. Once these IPO proceeds have actually been invested and we've actually started seeing some gains from that, we're not adverse to declaring dividends in the future as well. But, you know, you're not going to see it immediately in the first year of listing and all that. You know, we've stated in our prospectus, we've got an objective, we've got things that we want to achieve, and we've got use for the proceeds. And only once that has been put into place and we're generating excess reserves, perhaps then we'll consider a dividend payout.
Okay, so first year, no dividends at this point. Okay. Thank you for speaking with us. Adlan Herkus, Financial Controller of Malaysian Genomics Resource Centre, or MGRC. I think the balloting for the stock closes tomorrow at 5 p.m. I'm Noel Lim on BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by the CIMB Group, Southeast Asia's leading universal bank. BFM 89.9, the business station.